Welcome into the rundown this morning on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Hello, everybody. I'm Ryan Porth alongside Elijah Campbell, who is running point back at our Wholesale Inc. Studios on Murfreesboro Pike. Chase McCabe is on vacation here the next couple of days. Marquise Munson is going to be with Willie Donick today from 10 to 2 on Darren Donick and Chase. And Marquise and I will be holding down the fort tomorrow from 10 to 2 for Darren Donick and Chase as well. Some much-needed time off for everybody. It's been a long haul here in the last few months without much live sports to discuss and getting into the mode of some summer vacations. So happy to let the guys have a short little break here. But Elijah, bringing him in now. Elijah, how are you this morning?
I'm fantastic. We're mixing it up a bit. We're having a nice, interesting next couple days.
Yeah, absolutely. For sure. So last night, I actually put down, my fiance and I actually put down the first offer we've ever put down on a house.
Oh, congratulations. Yeah, this is a big week for you.
Potentially. So fingers crossed that everything can go well. We're supposed to hear back today.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully, that offer goes better than a lot of the baseball offers.
Well,
that's been going around.
That's exactly where I was going to lead into this, because yesterday, Major League Baseball put forth a proposal to the players' union, and the proposal from Major League Baseball is 60 games, full prorated salaries for players, an expanded postseason. And you would think that's a step in the right direction. I'm not going to get my hopes up that it is a step in the right direction. Everything that you hear either last night or this morning says the players still aren't buying this. And look, that's not necessarily a surprise. But if this proposal were to be accepted, this proposal of a 60-game season would be completed in 70 days before the postseason, and the season would start on July 19th, a Sunday, a weird day to start the season. You would think they might start on a Friday and just get going with a three-game series over a weekend, but that's neither here nor there. All of this came after Rob Manfred, MLB commissioner, announced yesterday that he met face-to-face with Tony Clark of the MLBPA Tuesday in Arizona. And Rob Manfred thinks progress was made. And Rob Manfred, in his statement yesterday, he said, quote, "We left that meeting with a jointly developed framework that we agreed could form the basis of an agreement and subject to conversations with our respective constituents. I summarized that framework numerous times in the meeting and sent Tony a written summary consistent with our conversations yesterday. I am encouraging the clubs to move forward, and I trust Tony is doing the same." Elijah Campbell, do we think we can trust Tony Clark to do the same and move forward and try to nail down a deal sooner rather than later?
That's a tough question. At this point, I don't know if we can really trust Rob Manfred to be completely honest with us as well, because after the reports of their meeting, there was reports of the agreement, and the MLBPA's communications Twitter account said that there was no agreement. So right now, it's kind of like a he said kind of thing going on right now. It's hard to really trust either side right now, especially if it took them, you know, months just to even get in a room together right now. It's really hard to believe either side right now. And Rob Manfred really hasn't done the best job in the world of kind of painting himself out in the light of trying to get this season on the move. And I think the massive time it took to get a meeting is kind of evidence of that. So right now, I kind of just been taking everything that Rob Manfred says with a grain of salt.
Well, exactly. How can you trust Rob Manfred after last week he told Carl Ravage that he was 100% confident that a season would take place, and then he tells Mike Greenberg five days later that he wasn't confident that a 2020 season would take place? How does that happen?
I mean, there was definitely a lie going on there, because you're not 100% sure if it takes less than a week to change your mind. So, I mean, sure, he's definitely going to say things just to, I guess, get his perception to make it look like he's not obstructing, you know, the start of a season or any meaningful negotiation. And I think obviously his words in that example that you threw out there alone is evidence of that. So it's really hard to take what he says, you know, as truth. And so it's in, you're kind of leaning on the Players Association to tell you the same thing too, but they also have their side to it. So it's a really messy negotiation. And if we learned anything, it's that baseball is definitely going to drag their feet if they can.
You used a great word, messy. That would be very accurate for this entire situation for Major League Baseball. And we'll see probably maybe today, maybe tomorrow, whether or not the Players Union is going to have a counter offer to this, whether or not yesterday was truly a step in the right direction for Major League Baseball to potentially host a 2020 season. I would not expect the players to accept this offer at all. When you hear the numbers, when you hear insiders talk, it does sound like the landing point for a 2020 season, if there is one, is likely going to be around 70 games. But here was Buster Olney on ESPN Radio last night asking the question all of us baseball fans are thinking. Where was this meeting between Rob Manfred and Tony Clark? Where was this 5 weeks ago?
You know, we've gone over, now that it looks like they're going to get the agreement, we've gone over Mount Everest, and then now there's K2 ahead of us. Because, of course, they got all the complications, the health and safety. But this was the big one. You know, coming up, and I shouldn't put it in the past tense because they haven't finalized the terms, but the fact that you essentially had the owners surrender and wave the white flag and acknowledge what they should have acknowledged 5 weeks ago and made a significant compromise. And it's got to be the first question to Rob Manfred in the next time he gets in front of reporters. Where was this 5 weeks ago? Why did you drag the sport through all this crap here in recent weeks rather than just find middle ground back then? It makes no sense. Made no sense then. It makes no sense now.
That was ESPN's Buster Olney last night on Spain and Company on ESPN Radio. And look, the players have been saying in the last week, tell us when, tell us where. The owners have essentially done that with this proposal, even though it may not be exactly what they were looking for in terms of the overall money coming out of the owners' pockets. The owners have essentially told at least when. That when is July 19th. Which is when the 60-game season would begin. It's time for the players to expedite this process, not let it drag out any longer and have, you know, Monday felt like rock bottom for Major League Baseball. We cannot have that feeling again here in the next 48 hours. Get a deal done. Get on the diamond. But according to ESPN's Jeff Passan, the players could potentially come up with a counterproposal that could get us right back to where we were Monday night.
Right now, Major League Baseball wants to hold a 60-game season. Right now, players are talking and saying, we do not want to do a 60-game season. Right now, Major League Baseball is saying, but wait, we thought we had a 60-game season. And right now, the Players Association is like, no, 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 we're going to come back at you, and it's probably going to be in the neighborhood of 70 or 72. And that, Scott, is what runs the risk of blowing this entire thing up. There's a chance that the owners see that, hear that, and say, you know what, forget this. We're just going to implement the season. It'll be a shorter season. We're done with this.
That was Jeff Passan of ESPN with Scott Van Pelt last night on SportsCenter. Elijah, it kind of feels like Jeff Passan is a nightly guest with Scott Van Pelt with the latest on Major League Baseball. And this has turned into a major soap opera that is a black eye for the sport of baseball. And no matter when they come back, a huge opportunity will have been missed by not coming back on July 4th weekend. It would have been so awesome to get baseball back on America's weekend, July 4th. They would have gotten a month of games in with most of the sports stage to themselves. But it sounds like best case scenario now is July 19th, which a season, in my mind, is better than no season, no matter how many games are played. But we were texting back and forth last night, Elijah, when discussing this, and whether it's 60 games, whether it's 70 games, you don't feel like this season would be considered legitimate.
It's hard to think that. to me, the threshold is about 50%. Even if you play about half the games, you can at least say that you had, you know, obviously half the season, and the ship for that has sailed a long time ago. And I think it's made even worse that they missed the opportunity, like you mentioned, of having that July 4th opening day. It's something that, you know, we might not ever see again if that was to happen. And the damage, I'm afraid, has already been done for Major League Baseball. They can still start a season, which would still be nice, but we're going to think of it differently, especially if there is an expanded playoff. Playing only maybe 60 games, much less than what half a season would be, I mean, maybe even like a quarter of the season, and then having extra teams in the playoffs, opening the door for a team that might be hovering 500 or below 500 to win your World Series, definitely makes 2020 kind of an eyesore of a season. And it's not, at least it's better than 94 in terms of at least having a season and a World Series if it's played. But I'm afraid a lot of the damage is already done just because you've missed so much time and missed a huge opportunity, like you said, to have the spotlight on your sport, which is something that Major League Baseball has tried to do the entire last decade. This is a league that's been trying to save its image ever since that first strike shortened season in 94. And then through the steroid scandal and then the Astros cheating scandal, MLB has desperately tried to change its image over the past 26 years. And this obviously is doing it no favors, and it's throwing gasoline in an already large fire.
I hear what you're saying, and I hear what everybody else is saying with the legitimacy of a shorter season. And I would tend to agree with that because you can bring up past examples of teams that were out of the playoff race after their first 50 or 60 games and then ended up being in the postseason and having success. Case in point, the Washington Nationals last year after going 19-31 through 50 games. But I dug a little deeper last year through 60 games. Last season through 60 games, here were the records of the playoff teams that ended up playing in October last year. The Dodgers were 41-19. The Astros were 40-20. The Twins were 40-20. The Yankees were 38-22. Tampa Bay was 37-23. Milwaukee 34-26. Atlanta 33-27. St. Louis 31-29. Oakland 30-30. And then the Nationals 27-33. The majority of the playoff teams in October had really good records through 60 games. And I do understand where people are coming from when they say that it's a marathon and not a sprint. But a shorter season, whether it's 60 or 70 games, it would not have any lulls within it. There would be no dog days of summer for the baseball season where we're thinking, oh, can we just get to the playoffs? I mean, we would blink and the playoffs would be here. And that alone would be attractive to a fringe baseball fan, and the fringe baseball fan is what baseball needs right now. They've got their purists. Some of the purists are turned off by all this. Some of the purists may not watch in 2020 and come back in 2021 when there's 162. I get it. But you need to attract the fringe baseball fan right now, if you're baseball, to expand your audience. And I mean, Darren Donick and Chase had a caller earlier this week saying that they're a fringe baseball fan. They don't really watch throughout the season because the games don't mean as much. They're long games to sit through, and you almost have to dedicate a lot of your time throughout the summer to watch baseball. And if you're only having a 60 to 70 game season, as short as that may be, and Elijah, less than 50%, I get it. But I do think when you look at a shorter season, it would be attractive, it would be fun, and having this is a whole lot better than having nothing.
Yeah, fun. My thing is, too, is I see what you're saying with the regular season length. Like, every game is going to matter a whole lot more than it would even in your standard 162-game season. To me, when you expand the playoffs and have about eight teams in each league get in, that's when you're going to have some, like, bad baseball team, especially if they get off to bad starts, have a chance to get in there, and then something fluky, I guess, kind of can happen. Now, for chaos sake, yeah, and entertainment value, it's definitely going to be a lot different, because a team that can go 40-20 like the Houston Astros can fall to a team that's like an eight, would be like an eight seed, I guess, in this new, I guess, expanded playoff role. So it's a trade-off for sure. But if I would kind of like to see the playoffs stay the same as they are, because that's my favorite thing about baseball is the playoff, and that only the best teams are the teams that are getting in. You're not getting teams that are under 500.
Coming up next, former Major League Baseball reliever David Weathers spent almost two decades in the sport of baseball as a reliever. He's going to join us next. Does he think this would be a legitimate season if it were 60 or 70 games? That's coming up next here on The Rundown. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Elijah Campbell. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth and Elijah Campbell here with you this morning. And man, would it be good to hear that organ playing in a Major League Baseball stadium at some point this summer. Man, I miss that music. So old school and so good when it comes to the sport of baseball. We are hopefully going to be joined here by David Weathers here in the next couple minutes. We are efforting to get him on the line. Really curious to hear what he thinks about what's going on right now in the sport of baseball, because David Weathers played back in 1994. He was with the Florida Marlins, one of the probably 30 teams that he played with. It felt like he was a journeyman across the majors, and he was a part of Major League Baseball back in 1994 when there was the strike. How does this compare to what went on back in 94 and the PR hit that happened back then and the PR hit that's happening right now? And Elijah, when you think of the sport of baseball and what it's gone through in the last 5 weeks, it just comes across from the owners and the players that they don't truly get it. They don't understand. They do not understand how baseball fans are feeling right now, how sports fans are feeling right now about their sport and the damage that it could potentially do or will do, especially if there's no 2020 season.
Yeah, and the worst part about this, too, especially from the owner's standpoint and from the players, it's a different crop of players. This players' union is obviously a lot different. Now, there's some different owners as well, but for the most part, I mean, the owners are the same, and they experienced the 94 strike and what happened there and the damage it did on the league and the fact that we haven't really learned from that mistake, and it wasn't like it's ancient history. I mean, it was 26 years ago. It's still fresh in a lot of people's mind. I mean, it was discussed on the June 17th, 1994 ESPN 30 for 30 that was on ESPN late last night too. I mean, it's still relatively, you know, recent memory. So the fact that I guess a group of owners still haven't learned what this does to the league in terms of not being able to compromise, not being able to get the product on the field, especially now in a time of a global pandemic where this has probably more of a worse impact on your league than the 94 one did, is shameful. And from the player standpoint too, yeah, like I understand their point of view of not being, of having a small, I guess, window to make their earning and their living throughout the sport of baseball. But unfortunately for them, it looks bad on them just as much, and public perception isn't really going to take that into account, because they're both going to look really bad regardless, especially if there is no season.
Mm-hmm. It looks bad on both the owners. You've got billionaires not willing to take some cuts through all this, or less willing to take some cuts through all this through a global pandemic. And then you've got the players, where you've got 40 million people unemployed across the country, and here they are, you know, asking for a ton of money. And I get it. We don't walk in those shoes, but at the same time, the optics of it are just horrible. I mean, Rob Manfred said it the other night with Mike Greenberg, that this is a disaster. This is a complete disaster for the sport of baseball. And I hope Rob Manfred understands what he also has done to the sport of baseball. through all of this and how he is liable for the entire sport being dragged through the ringer. And you've got the players vocally upset with the owners. You've got the owners taking shots at the players in statements. You've got the players taking shots at owners in statements. I mean, it is just a complete mess. Nothing that we want to see. And we were clamoring 6 weeks ago, don't do this publicly. And clearly, there is a huge lack of trust between the owners and the players. I don't know if that's really ever going to change. And who knows if there were positive steps in the right direction in the last 26 years since that last strike. But whatever positive steps happened have been completely nullified by what's gone on in the last 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is a disaster. If you're Rob Manfred, this is going to be the lasting image of his legacy, almost regardless of what happens, you know, from here on out, no matter what happens at the end of this season, if we have one or not. When Rob Manfred is no longer the commissioner of the MLB, a lot of people are going to point to this year right here and how this might be the most damaging work stoppage that would even trump 1994 just because of the situation that has gone on in America in 2020. It's really unfortunate to see that to baseball. And when you're talking about the players union as well, one thing I was thinking about, that if Tony Clark really wants to at least gain solid, I guess, public imagery and a little bit of sympathy in his players' cause, urgency is the big thing. They need to work on something and work on something soon. They can't drag their feet with a response either. They said there was no agreement yesterday. There's been obviously no agreement in the last 6 weeks, but the more urgently they can come back with a counter, the better off they're going to be viewed throughout all of this, and it's only going to make Rob Manfred look worse.
Well, and the only credit that I'll give Rob Manfred here in the last week is that he's been willing to face the music with ESPN. Mm-hmm. I want to see Tony Clark. I want to see Tony Clark's face in front of a camera explaining why the players are not playing baseball on July 4th weekend.
Mm-hmm. Players' tweets aren't doing enough.
Right. I want to see Tony Clark's face on ESPN explaining exactly why the players are holding their ground like this. Because and whoever hosts it, whether it's Mike Greenberg, whether it's Carl Ravitch, whether it's Scott Van Pelt, whomever, to grill Tony Clark on why the players are doing this in the current state of America in 2020. You brought up the word work stoppage. This would be the most damaging work stoppage in maybe sports history because of what's going on. And the sport of baseball cannot afford to go the entire calendar year of 2020 without their sport being played, because it has been going in the wrong direction in the last 10 to 20 years, really since the steroid era. The interest from baseball fans across the nation has waned because the games have gone on too long. The interest level is not as high in seeing small ball or great pitching matchups. You know, they changed the baseball to get more home runs last year, and that worked. But it's not like that resulted in baseball fans just flocking back to the sport. I mean, attendance wasn't great. TV numbers weren't great. The Washington Nationals and Houston Astros had an epic 7-game World Series that really didn't really do it for America, which was surprising to me, even though neither are marquee franchises within the scope of baseball. They're not the Yankees. They're not the Red Sox. But the Astros, a very, very good team who won the World Series back in 2017. You've got the Washington Nationals with star players like Anthony Rendon and Juan Soto and Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer. But for whatever reason, the star players on the Nationals, the star players on the Astros, those two brands in a 7-game series did not do it for the sport.
Mm-hmm. A very good series, a back-and-forth series.
It was epic. It was an epic Game 7.
Mm-hmm. It's one of the best, better World Series, I mean, we've seen in the last 2 decades.
Certainly in our lifetimes.
Yeah, for sure. And that just goes to show, too, if that wasn't really pushing the needle like it should, just how disenchanted MLB fans have become, and even the casual sports fan has, at baseball itself. I think the funny thing to me, too, is we've almost forgotten about the Astros, this massive Astros cheating scandal, and the story about the Yankees cheating, too, potentially just as bad, if not worse. We've completely forgotten about it because the MLB can't get out of their own way. And that has been, I guess, the most typical example of Major League Baseball doing things the wrong way that we could possibly have, is that they just buried one of their own, I guess, disgraceful storylines of their entire almost 200-year history or whatever, because they can't get their stuff together right now when seemingly every league on planet Earth can.
I mean, if they go 2020 without a season and it comes out that Rob Manfred covered up a Yankees sign-stealing scandal,
I
hope there's a new commissioner in 2021.
That's the crazy thing. Yeah, we haven't even talked about that. Like, that's how bad this thing is right now. There's a whole other cheating scandal that's just starting to get dug up, and it's just barely making airwaves across the entire country just because Rob Manfred in the Major League Baseball and Tony Clark as well have completely botched the situation.
Can you imagine if baseball was going on right now and the New York Yankees were in the middle of that?
Oh my God. Goodness, yeah. Oh, if anything, that would actually, in a weird way, I think that would bring some more eyes to the game, especially if you had a Yankees Astros game, just to see who throws at who.
Mm-hmm.
But even now, we can't even get that because we can't agree to an agreement to get these guys on the field.
You would have Aaron Boone throwing a baseball at the Astros dugout, and then you would have the Astros dugout throwing baseballs at the Yankees dugout.
Oh, at this point, it's like World War I trench warfare, but
exactly.
They're in dugouts just throwing baseballs at each other. Like, you can't even get on the field just because there's that much animosity between the two because they both got caught cheating. But we can't even get that because of Rob Manfred.
Isn't that very fishy to you, the whole Yankees deal that started to surface over the weekend?
Very. It's also what I expected. I remember saying a couple of months ago when the Astros story first broke and you had the Aaron Judges and the Brett Gardners, whatever, of the world getting, you know, too boo-hooey or, oh, we got robbed, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, guys might want to watch what they're saying right now because they might have teammates with some baseball skeletons in their baseball closets. And that's exactly what's happening right now, is that, well, you know, you guys weren't necessarily the saints of baseball either, that you've also done a little bit of your own advantage gaining. And that happened throughout the entire league. Almost every team had one person condemning what the Astros did with a big high chair of moral superiority. And I thought that was a little odd too, because in baseball, as we've learned over the last two decades, isn't necessarily the cleanest sport when it comes to fair play.
Well, I do wonder in the next 5 years if there will be more teams that come out as being accused and proven that they stole signs. And then it becomes the sign stealing era of, were there more teams that were doing it, that weren't doing it, kind of when you go back, you know, in comparison to the steroid era, were there more players roiding up than there weren't?
Yeah, I think so, too. And I thought so a couple months ago as well. I mean, it's just, we saw the same thing with steroids. One person got popped and it was like, oh, this guy's a disgrace to the game. He cheated. And then, of course, you uncover everything else. And baseball is not exactly as clean as it is. And I'm saying, it's not like the Astros use brand new technology. They used a camera. They are not the first ones to think about using a camera to steal signs. It's almost so simple that anyone could do it. And I'm not just convinced that just that one team was doing it.
In the 2017 ALCS, the Yankees scored 3 runs in 4 games in Houston and scored 19 runs in 3 games in New York.
May not have had the trash cans, but they probably had something.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we will hear from Predators captain Roman Josi. He spoke with the media yesterday. And also, why a teammate of his thinks he deserves some hardware when the awards come out later this summer. That's all coming up next here on The Rundown. I'm Ryan Porth. He's Elijah Campbell. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Just how much do you feel like that can help you guys once you get back together, knowing that you have kind of gone through that adversity?
It definitely helps. I mean, I think every time you go through some adversity as a team, you learn something from it. If you go to a good stretch or a bad stretch, there's always something to learn from. And I think coming back, like every team is kind of starting fresh. It's almost like a new season. And yeah, I mean, I've been talking to a lot of guys. We're definitely excited. We're motivated. Obviously, it was an up and down year, so we have a lot to prove during these playoffs. So we're all excited, and we definitely learned a lot from this year.
That was Roman Josi yesterday meeting with the media for the first time in about a month. It felt like that Roman Josi has met with the media over Zoom. Certainly some interesting times for all of us in the sports media business, having to conduct press conferences and interviews over Zoom and not with a recorder in locker rooms or in press conference settings. But Roman Josi there saying how the adversity for the Nashville Predators that they faced this past regular season, where they had a lot of ups and downs. It was a roller coaster regular season that included the firing of head coach Peter Laviolette and bringing in John Hines. And with John Hines as head coach, they were streaky. It always seemed like, Elijah, that they would take one step forward and then they would take two steps back, or two steps forward and then one step back. They could never find a rhythm throughout really the second half of the season. Really after Halloween, when they blew that huge lead against the Calgary Flames, I think they were up 4-1 after two periods of play. They lose that game 6-5 in overtime on the Matthew Tkachuk goal of the year candidate between the legs to beat the buzzer. You know, all the stars had to align for that goal to happen. But really after that, the season really took a nosedive, and this team faced a lot of adversity, and there was a lot of scrutiny towards that Predators team locally and nationally on what was happening, and resulted in the change behind the bench. And at the season pause, the Preds had won three games in a row, looked like they were starting to gel, and now they may go almost 5 months between games. And it is interesting to hear Roman Josi there say that he feels like that adversity could help them. I also feel like, Elijah, that them getting some practice time with John Hines is going to help them as well, where this team, back in October, they started really quickly. They looked like one of the best teams in the league up until that Halloween night that I referenced. And maybe this break will seem like a reset for that squad that is certainly capable enough to go on a run.
Yeah, that's the crazy thing about this whole stoppage too, is that even though a team like the Preds they really do have all the talent in the world, and if you look at their roster top to bottom, there's not many rosters in the NHL that you can definitively be like, yeah, that team is exponentially better than the Nashville Predators. And honestly, I think the stoppage might help this, having all this time off, just because they, like you mentioned, they finally get to have a little bit of a training camp with John Hines and get to learn his system. You and Justin Bradford talked about that a couple weeks ago on Preds Insiders, and that was an interesting point. And to me, a team that is that talented can actually benefit from that. They get to rest. They get to fully be healthy. And in their matchup against the Coyotes too, yeah, the Coyotes are also going to have a weird goalie situation going on as well. So they almost cancel each other out in that department. And with the Preds too, them being that talented, that can almost make up for not being together for that long, just because they do have the roster that they have. And it almost takes away everything, all the inconsistency they had in the regular season before the stoppage, because that almost just simply doesn't matter anymore. At this point in the NHL season, with returning to play, everything that happened before March 12th just doesn't matter outside of the record and just getting to be in the spot right now. Ask the Chicago Blackhawks. They have just as much a good chance as everybody, and there's still a lot of top-end talent on that roster with guys like Patrick Kane. So teams like that, I think, are going to benefit from it, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised to see the Preds make a little bit of a run, just because they're too talented not to, first of all, and then every team that was playing a lot better than them had to take a break as well. So they're just starting at an even playing field, and it's just a clean slate. I think they're going to benefit from that.
Sure. And speaking of Arizona, when I was looking into Arizona here in the last week or so, I forgot that they had Phil Kessel on their team. It's been so long since we've had hockey that I forgot.
Yeah.
You know, all the talk was Taylor Hall, and then I was like, oh, yeah, they've got Phil Kessel. So on
got him the offseason,
well.
Yeah. It's easy to forget.
Yeah, so you mentioned Preds Insiders, and the other night on Preds Insiders, Monday evening, Ryan Johansson was kind enough to join me. And if you missed that full interview, you can catch it on demand at thegamenashville.com or our app. But I asked Ryan Johansson point blank why, in his mind, he thinks Roman Josi should win the Norris Trophy.
Well, in my mind, this year specifically, it was every single game he was doing everything he could to throw our team on his back. I don't think I've played with a player in my 9 years that was that consistently dominant. He was every single night, every time he touched that puck, he was doing everything he can to win and be the best player he could be. And it was special to watch him this year. Every single game, you know, and that's with all the analyticals to back it up. What kind of year he had? So yeah, he's got my vote. Their vote. The old boys got my vote. So, you know, I love to hear that they're seriously considering him because he definitely deserves to be up there with John Carlson, and who had an amazing year too. But definitely make it a tough choice for everyone, I'm sure.
That was Ryan Johansson Monday evening on Preds Insiders. And look, the fact that Johansson brought up the dominance, the sheer dominance that Roman Josi can display night in and night out, both offensively and probably more offensively or within puck possession than he does defensively, but he's nothing to sniff at defensively either. And one of the analytics, there are so many analytics out there that can help you lean in the direction of Roman Josi in this conversation when it comes to the Norris Trophy, him versus John Carlson. There are so many of those numbers out there. The one that stood out the most to me is something that I've referenced before on this show. On the forecheck.com had a story out there with the comparison of 5-on-5 offense, the effect of Josi on the ice for Nashville versus when he's not on the ice, doing the same for Carlson in Washington, and it's not even close. The comparison between the effect that Josi has to the Predators offense and John Carlson has on the Capitals offense. And you also factor in the defensive play, and Roman Yossi's defensive metrics are a lot better than John Carlson. So to me, it's not even close. Roman Josi should win the Norris Trophy, even though he has 10 points less than John Carlson in the same amount of games played, which is 69. And Elijah, you dug up some analytics at moneypuck.com that can help back this up as well.
Oh, yeah. And there's a couple on MoneyPuck as well that make it really close. And if anything, if you know you're talking about awards like the Norris Trophy, the most you can ask for, at least as a hockey fan, is that you can have like these debates. And one that I found was John Carlson obviously is the better offensive player. His goals above expected is 6.1. The next highest defenseman is 4.3, and that's Cam Fowler. Roman Josi's down at about 2.9. So in terms of scoring goals that you're not supposed to score, John Carlson's as good as a lot of offensive players. But if you go in terms of expected goals, Roman Josi's at 7.1, second amongst all defensemen, Shea Theodore from Las Vegas being number one. And there's a big drop-off from him all the way down to Carlson. Carlson's up midway through this list, meaning that Roman Josi is creating more goal chances for his teams. They just have not been converted, whether it be luck or teammates failing him. He's creating more, I guess, goals that are to be expected than almost any other defenseman in hockey. And that's one of my favorite advanced stats in terms of shot creation in hockey. Especially from a defenseman's point of view, too, because you mentioned what Roman Josi does well offensively is controlling the puck and being able to at least move the offense forward, even though he's not the raw scorer or shooter that John Carlson is. And then you add the metrics of what the Preds are without him on the ice compared to what they are with him on the ice. You can make the case that Roman Josi is certainly more of a valuable asset to the Preds than John Carlson is to the Capitals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know where the Predators would be at the season pause if it weren't for Roman Josi, and that could lend him to maybe getting a handful of Hart Trophy votes for MVP. He's not going to win it, not even close, but he might get a couple votes for MVP just with how valuable he has been to the Nashville Predators all season long. And these numbers that we're putting out there, these analytics that we're sharing offensively, at least to me, debunks completely the back of the hockey card totals of points. John Carlson, 75 points. Roman Josi, 65 points. I had a voter message me on Twitter after I put out on Twitter last week that it would be a bigger sham to the Norris Trophy that Roman Josi didn't win in 2020 compared to when Shea Weber didn't win in both 2011 and 2012. And I had a voter DM me on Twitter and basically say, oh, well, John Carlson had 10 more points than Roman Josi. It's a lot closer than you think. And I simply shared a couple of links of, okay, well, if you're just going to go off sheer point totals, here are some analytics that show you Roman Yossi's value offensively. So hopefully when the awards come out, Roman Josi will win the Norris Trophy like he deserves. But coming up next, Danny Butler of the Ford Ice Center is going to join us. The Ford Ice Centers in Antioch and Bellevue are reopening. We'll learn a lot more about that. Plus, our Twitter question of the day, that's all coming up next on The Rundown. Ryan Porth alongside Elijah Campbell on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into The Rundown. Ryan Porth here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, having a lot of fun talking some baseball and some Preds this morning. And the mayor, John Cooper, just came out here in the last 10 to 15 minutes and said that phase three of Nashville's reopening will begin Monday, June 22nd. So that will be, this is a positive step in the right direction for the city of Nashville. Let's keep our fingers crossed that everyone can collectively keep doing the right and safe things that can eventually get us to phase four so that we don't have to be in phase three as long as we were in phase two. So positive news this morning for the city of Nashville. Again, phase three of our reopening will begin Monday, June 22nd. Speaking of reopening, the Ford Ice Centers in Antioch and Bellevue have some positive news about the reopening of their facilities in Bellevue this week and then Antioch on Monday. And joining us now is Danny Butler, who is the GM of the Ford Ice Centers and does a phenomenal job of running those two facilities. Danny, how are we doing this morning?
We're doing good. And speaking of doing the right thing, I have my mask on. Even though we're doing this over the phone, I got my mask on to make sure we're not spreading any germs. So
well, that's
there we go.
That is the kind of leader you are, Danny, as the GM of the Ford Ice Centers.
No, come on. Just doing the right thing. Like you said, that's what everyone should be doing and making sure we're keeping everybody safe. So
exactly. So Antioch Ford Ice Center opens Monday. The Bellevue Ford Ice Center opened this week. A great sign of moving forward and getting people back in those facilities. What can you tell our audience about what they can expect when they go to Ford Ice Center in Bellevue or Antioch here in the near future?
Yeah, it is a really great sign, and I'll explain why we opened the way we did a little bit. You know, we could have been pretty greedy and just opened our doors wide open the first day and said, all right, everybody come back to both facilities. But what we really wanted to do was open one, make sure we knew exactly what we were doing, how the building should operate, how it should flow, and make the changes over the week before we went ahead and opened both our facilities. So we went ahead and opened Bellevue on Monday, on the 15th, with a pretty limited programming. We had some the junior Preds travel hockey team, plus some figure skating and some coaching lessons in this past week. So not our normal 5 a.m. to 1 a.m. programming, almost 9 to 5-ish for this past week. You know, and then it allowed us to figure out what we're doing, how to operate, and it will allow us to open Antioch on Monday with a lot more programming at both facilities, especially now that we are going to phase three. Big thing about going to phase three, it allows us to play some of our rec league games. So we can have some adult leagues back and have some of our youth leagues come back in and our learn to skate programs. But we really are doing a lot within the building. And I really am, I mean, I'm proud to work for the Nashville Predators and the way that we've handled everything over the last 95 days or so. But really proud of the way that we handled opening Ford Ice Center. Again, we could have opened on the 8th and started letting people in, but we really wanted to take the time to make sure we were safe and all of our programming was safe. So we limited the number of programs we have. There's a pretty big spacing between our programs, typically between one program and the next. There's about 15 minutes, which is just enough time to zamboni the ice and get another group of kids on. But right now we're running about 30 to 45 minutes between programs, which allows everybody who's in the building to leave the building, and then allows a new group of people to come back into the building. In that time, we also have the opportunity to get the building clean where any of our guests were. So we have Janet King, who's a great partner of ours, in the building the entire time we're open, cleaning everything that may have just been touched or was touched or has been touched. And then again, overnight, they're coming in and cleaning and sanitizing the whole facility. So really it's important for us to make sure we're doing the right things on and off the ice for our guests, our athletes, and also our staff. It really is important to us that everyone walks into the building and feels really, really comfortable. So I really do think we're doing the right thing, and we're really trying to control the spread of what's happening in the world right now, but allowing people to come back into our facilities and enjoy hockey or skating, and that's important to us.
Kudos to you guys for taking all those proper measures. And whenever somebody goes out now, whether it's to a hardware store or to a grocery store, you see the proper measures being taken in those places as well, with all the different signs of stay 6 feet apart, stand here, things like that. So good safety measures there, taking with the players and the parents. And for you, in your mind, what does this do for the Antioch and Bellevue locations and those communities to get Ford Ice Center back open?
Yeah, again, selfishly, I've talked about it a little bit. I don't think we're the heart or driver of either community, but I do think we play a big factor in maybe some outsiders coming to both Antioch and Bellevue. Maybe people who don't necessarily live here coming here and spending money and being able to play some games, get our youth leagues in, and then eventually our camps and tournaments that we have scheduled for the end of July. We're bringing in, some tourism dollars again, which is really what Nashville has been based on for the last couple of years. So once we get people back to the facility and eating in the restaurants here and doing everything around, you'll really start feeling like things are opening back up, and hopefully we do get into that phase four where we can do a little bit more, have some more people on the ice, bring back some of our general programming, the public skates or the stick times or birthday parties. And then kind of you see everything just start reopening and re-energizing the Nashville area too. So
Danny Butler is the GM of the Ford Ice Center. So hopefully everybody, Danny, can go out and enjoy the Ford Ice Center in Bellevue or Antioch safely here in the near future. And we appreciate you taking some time to call in this morning.
Yeah, no, we really appreciate it. So we'll have some new programming starting in August. Right now we're just running programming that people have already been signed up for, so our youth and adult leagues. But be on the lookout for that, all right? I really appreciate the time today, guys.
Absolutely. Good to catch up with you, Danny. Thanks for joining us.
Take care. Thanks, guys.
That's Danny Butler of the Ford Ice Centers. The Predators run both in Antioch and Bellevue. Hope everyone can go out and enjoy the Ford Ice Center safely here in the not-too-distant future. All right, before we close for the morning and get to Darren, Donick, and Chase, Elijah, we have our Twitter question of the day, which is something that was discussed on Golic and Wingo this morning. Which college football team has the most iconic helmet? And the guys this morning, the two Golics, were biased. They were taking shots at Michigan because Michigan apparently yesterday put out a tweet saying that their helmet was the most iconic. So for you, Elijah, what would be your response to which college football team has the most iconic helmet?
Oh man, that's tough. And of course, no shocker to see them side with Notre Dame there, too. Yeah. Notable Notre Dame alums. But I have to agree with them. I think Notre Dame, in terms of, when I think of college football and iconic, I think of Notre Dame's helmet. But to honorable mention, like Penn State, they did not mention once. They talked about USC. They dogged on Michigan. Michigan's a close second, but I'd also put Penn State up there as well. Those white helmets, iconic, simple, clean, and then I'd throw Alabama, and then just to be a homer, Tennessee under there as well.
What about Ohio State with the iconic Buckeye stickers?
See, some players have a lot of stickers. Some players don't. I think it's always been the consistency thing. Some have a lot of are loaded up with stickers. Your better players are loaded up with the stickers. Some is not. I don't know. But Ohio State's there. They're top 10. I wouldn't put them in the top five though.
I would put them in the top five.
It'd be hard for me too.
I also think Texas with the Longhorn, and that is a clean, good looking helmet. I would put Texas up there as well. And you know who would have a lot of stickers on their Ohio State football helmet. That would be Willie Donick and Marquise Munson. They're both coming up next with Darren Donick and Chase. I'm Ryan Porth alongside Elijah Campbell. Thanks for listening to The Rundown this morning. More talk about baseball and everything going on in the sports world coming up next on Darren Donick and Chase on ESPN 102.5 The Game.